This beginning of the second reel, Chuck Mack reel, on Channel One Right. This is Thursday, 2nd of April, 1970. Mm-hmm. Thursday, the 2nd of April, 1970, beginning of Chuck Mack 2, reel Chuck Mack 2, is Channel One Right. It's Channel One Right. We were over here in the kitchen last night and with a big tape recorder, and then I thought I'd just take it over there this afternoon. Ms. Mack had to go to the doctor, had to go to town. I thought he'd go too, but he didn't.
I wouldn't ask any better country than that. And I never have understood why I left up there. Because the people up there, see, I know them all. I brought up there with them, and you see, I come down here. I always had a hard time making a living up there. You see, a lot of times a fella can get a job away from home, and he can't get one at home.
That's
do you know
right.
that?
That's right.
I had two or three places in Georgia that I knew, and I kind of tried to find a job, you know, and I never could. I never even got close to it. And the last place I wanted to come was Florida.
Yeah.
I didn't have any Florida, didn't have attraction for me. I'd been down to the beach once, twice.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know the inside part, the inland part of Florida. But now that I got acquainted with the inland part, I never go to beaches anymore.
Well, we never go to the beaches. Now, I got a brother-in-law down at Delray Beach, and a nephew's chief of police there. And he's got one son that's a road patrolman. And last year I went over to Cedar Keys twice, and first time I got me some mullet, and they were good. They were roaring and fat, and I bought 50 pounds and come home, and we sliced them and dressed part of them and froze them, and the other part we put out in salt brine, and I really enjoyed them. And after Christmas, my son come and we went over to, Ocala National Forest over at Lake Delance. I got a brother over there, brother-in-law over there, and we went deer hunting a little bit. And way back, another brother-in-law and me went over there on a fishing trip to Salt Spring. An old fella come up there with some mullet still kicking.
Yeah.
And we got them and cleaned them and fried them out. And I thought it was the best I ever ate.
How you cook? Do you season them? How do you season them?
Just salt. And you can put a little pepper on it if you want them. And I don't know. They said you come over there that day. And I asked my sister-in-law, I said, can you still get mullet down there? The spring. She said, yeah, you get them every week. Well, I never thought it out. They're not real plentiful down there. It's, see, Salt Spring enters into the Ocklawaha, and it's that water there is mineral, it isn't salt. And I said, well, she says, I'm going over this afternoon, I can get you some if you want. No, I said, all right, get me 10 pounds. And I tried to give her the money. She said, no, wait till I come back. You can pay me when I bring them back. Well, she went over and didn't have any money. Said the truck hadn't come in. Well, that put me to thinking. I said, why would a truck? Where she went was right at the spring, the little old store there.
Yeah.
And my brother-in-law said, here they come from Cedar Key.
Yeah.
So I forgot about it. Coming on home, my boy says, if you want some mullet, we'll go over in the morning and get some. And so it's 60 miles from here. And we got up and left and went over and got some mullet and come back. Had some for dinner.
Yeah.
And but they weren't good. They were done laid out and poor. And
yeah.
I didn't like them, and I give most of them away, but you can get them over there. Now, we got those for 12 cents a pound, because it wasn't good as the first one, you know, that was fattened. But I got the first one for 15 cents a pound. Well, I got a friend, he comes through Peddler's Fish from down there. He has a variety of oysters, crab meat. He charges 35 cents a pound for them.
Yeah.
Well, if you want any of them out to anything, you can save money by going down there and getting them.
How often does he come?
Once a week. Now, he used to come, he was regular, but his father got sick and they got to where they were irregular and you couldn't depend on him.
Mr. Thrasher and them used to get a barrel of mullet. Once a week on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But just often not, he don't get them. Don't you know he sticks that little sign up?
Yeah, I know.
And then when he gets them, sometimes they're a little bitty thing.
Yeah, poor.
Yeah.
I like fish as good as anybody, but I want them to be fat and good to eat.
Yeah. When you were talking last night about batching, now that takes you, I didn't realize just how far back that took you. That way back before you before you married.
Yeah. I was batching when I got married.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it takes a little something out of you, I reckon, but hell, I was young. You might say young then. I didn't mind it.
Oh, yes.
I'd get up in the morning, I'd go to the kitchen, and the other boys would go feed the stock.
Uh-huh.
The time they got that done, come back, I'd have breakfast ready.
Uh-huh.
Then we'd all get out and go to work.
Yeah.
Come in at dinner time, I'd go by the commissary and get an armload of canned goods or something and go in there and maybe make coffee or warm something over, and we'd have our dinner. Then at night I'd cook a pretty good meal. When I'd come in from work, I'd go to the kitchen, they'd go to the lot and
yeah.
to the stall.
Yeah.
It worked out.
Now, what was that commissary doing out here?
You see, they had a pretty good crew of niggas out that one time.
Well, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they had one man and his wife had six children. Then we had another old, he was kind of a sub-foreman out there.
Yeah.
And then they had a fellow that went and come, and there was two old niggas that was clearing land out there. They'd come out Monday morning instead of Saturday dinner time. The boss would bring them out. And he just got out of, he won that commissary out there. And it was a pretty nice little place, and he was a spendthrift, I reckon is the best word to say.
Uh-huh.
And he'd buy the best of all kind of canned goods and stuff.
Now that was Bar?
John Bar Watkins.
John Bar Watkins.
Now his old dad was J.D., John Dixie Watkins.
Uh-huh.
It was just difference in their initial.
Mm-hmm. Now, John Barr, now he wasn't a young fella.
Yeah.
He was the grandson.
John Barr Watkins was a young fella. That,
yes.
Yes,
he's the one who built the house
mm-hmm.
and everything.
Yeah.
Well, what, young, 25? 30?
No, when I first went out there, he was, I'm just guessing, but I reckon I was out there a couple of years, maybe three before I was married.
Yeah.
And I was married when I was 26 years old.
Uh-huh.
And he was right about the same age.
About the same age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He always had an automobile. It was so far back, he had a white automobile, and the steering gear was on the right-hand side, and the lever was outside the body.
Yeah.
And then that didn't last too long. He had to get him something else.
Yeah.
He tried several different makes. And I think the Dodge was the one that lasted and stood up. That's a rough place. And he didn't give a darn, you know. He'd drive it through the woods anywhere.
Yeah. Well, now, did he think about that as being out in the woods?
Yeah, it was. Helmet could be. I reckon you'd call Helmet woods.
Yeah. Well, you know that old saying, you know, about living out in the woods.
Yeah.
Way back. Well, I could see how he, did he know how to do much of anything?
No. He didn't. He didn't want nobody to tell him. He was a graduate from university.
Oh.
And his old granddaddy owned a good many cattle, but he always let somebody else do the dirty work, so to speak, tend to them, marking, branding, and getting them up to sell and such like, things like that. Barney never took any active part in that.
Yeah. He never handled the cattle, worked with the cattle at all.
No. Whenever we pinned him or butchered anything out, he might come by and holler, good morning.
Yeah.
And he was a hunter and a fisherman.
Oh, he was.
And that was his hobby.
Yeah.
And back directly after I got out there, him and old Dr. Lucius Montgomery, a young Dr. Lucius Montgomery.
Yeah.
Was the only two wing shots that I knew of.
Oh.
Us old crackers, we wanted to mess a duck, or we'd slip around the edge and slip up on them and shoot them on the water.
Yeah.
And then there was two old fellas, brothers. You might have heard them mention it, Ferguson's. Cliff and Orrin Ferguson. They hunted ducks for, and sold them. They'd go out to the lake on a one-horse wagon and get in little old push duck boats. Get a winded day and they'd slip up on them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't hard to kill a 50 or 100 ducks.
Yeah.
And
they'd sell them.
They'd sell them, yeah. I don't know. I reckon it was legal then because everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
And there wasn't no hunters hardly. Except the old farmers around, you know, they'd slip down there. Maybe once or twice a week and get them a mess of ducks.
Yeah.
And I have lived, when we first lived out there, there was some season was better than others, but I have seen ducks and coots get up off that lake and it almost sound like thunder.
Yeah.
There'd be so many of them.
Yeah.
But you don't see that anymore.
Well, now he liked
to
fish and hunt.
Yeah, he had this fish with traps. He fished commercially too.
Okay.
And he claimed there was some wild turkeys up there. Well, there might have been a few. I never will forget one time he went up and bought. It was either 12 or 18. He had old nigger up there on the place where Jimmy Ramsey lived now, and he raised turkeys, and he got them from there. He got 18 turkeys or a dozen, I don't remember which. But anyhow, he went out there just for Christmas and shot them and killed them and gave them to his friends for Christmas presents. Wild turkeys.
Wild turkeys.
And he didn't, money wasn't no object to him. He'd get it from his mother or his daddy or his granddaddy.
Yeah.
And he sold it with lots and lots of money out there.
And he fished out there too.
That old nigger. That he'd get up in front of the boat and a lot of times didn't care how far it rival. And that Prairie Lake, Prairie Water, out on the Prairie, a lot of times it wouldn't be over 2 feet deep.
Yeah.
He'd see those big fish run, he'd shoot ahead of them and jar him enough to where he could pick him up.
Yeah.
And I have seen him come in there with a barrel of fish a lot of times.
Oh, really?
And if we wanted, and we'd go down there and pick up what we wanted to eat.
Yeah.
And he'd bundle up the rest of them and get them in the car and go to Gainesville, ice them down and ship them to Jacksonville.
Oh. He'd spend more on it than it's worth.
He didn't make no clear money out of it.
Yeah. How big was the commissary?
It was about as I believe it's 14 by 20, 22 feet. And just a There never was sealed if anything inside, but it had shells just like a store. And
yeah.
Had a little old desk in there, never did imagine that, because everything the niggas got was put on the books, and then Sandy come, they'd pick up his wage and then take his grocery bill out of it. And a lot of them just about took up what they made in groceries.
Everything they saw they wanted, if they could, if they let them have it, they'd buy it.
Yeah, and that was another one of my chores. I had a tin store. And come in some night tired as could be almost, and some sucker would want some little item, you know.
Yeah.
When it first started off, we had it in the back room in our house. Just a little 8x10 room, I guess it was.
Well, now, you didn't have this property then because you wasn't married.
No, I didn't have nothing but up there.
So you there. Just had a job up there?
That's right.
Working for Barr's daddy? Granddaddy?
Mm-mm. I was working for Barr.
You worked for Barr?
Yeah. John
Barr. Oh, he's your boss?
Yeah. Well, he was the big boss. My brother was boss at first out there.
Yeah. Lee?
Yeah. Then he worked hard as the rest of the hand.
Yeah.
Anything from building fence to butchering cows, whatever come had to be done, well, it was up to us to do it. And after he left, they decided they'd fence off their land across Ledworth Lake. It was 1.875 miles.
Yeah.
And the lake was practically dry then. We hauled all the material out there with mules and wagons.
Yeah.
And he had, and they used to get the post off their own property, which didn't cost so much. We put some American wire out from the edge, over 1/8 mile, I reckon, and then we put the rest of it in barbed wire. And that's been at least 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of those posts out there.
Old posts
still there? Yeah. And we got cypress posts used for braces, where we'd make a pull, you'd brace your post. A lot of those cypress posts are right there now.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of them old oak posts. They last forever, but they get hard. You can't put a
staple in them, right. Then it's not much better when you first get them out, unless you get them green.
Yeah.
And that's something you got to know something about if you split those things.
Yeah.
My son and grandson got out a good many out there and to put up his new fence. We can't get the man back with the bulldozer. He wants to have it raked and burn up those heaps up there.
How'd you and Lee gravitate up in this direction? Now, this is good ways from Fairfield and Redmond.
Well, he went up there to Lisbon. That's the old Underhill place is what it was originally known by. And he got in with Barr Watkins, an old man Barr. And young Barr, he wanted to move over here to Hamilton. Well, he moved over there, and I went up there to visit him one time, and he asked me if I wouldn't like to stay up there and work.
Uh-huh. You went over to visit Lee, your brother?
Yeah. And I thought that was the dangerous place I was seeing when I first went out there.
You mean pretty nice place?
It's a nice place, but it was different from what I was used to.
Oh.
See, down there around Fairfield, it's all, you might say, flat on a rolling land with some hills, but most of it was open country.
Yeah.
During up there, most of it was thick.
Yeah.
First cow I ever owned, I'd learned how to lead. I could catch and put a rope on, get on my horse and lead her. And I'd bring her up here and milk her, and then when she got in heat, I'd take her up there and turn in the hammock where there's a bull. We didn't have a bull then. And I was leading out one time, and there was a man and his wife from Georgia, and they had a brother-in-law up there, and she stopped there and wanted to know, ask, inquiring the way. I said, if you stay in this road, you can't miss it. She said, well, I'm sure glad of it. This is the damnedest desert I've ever seen in my life. Desert, man, it was a solid helmet.
How long did Barr stay out there?
I can't tell you for sure, but I imagine 10 or 15 years.
That long?
Yeah. He didn't live out there. Now, he lived in town.
Yeah.
But he built his house out there, and he'd come out there on weekends and have parties and whatnot. And he loved that place out there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, that sounds like Micanopy was pretty first in place then.
Yeah.
They had family with that much money.
Yes. I believe I told you that old man Barr, I think, was the wealthiest man around in this part of the country.
Yeah.
And old man Z.C. Herlong, I know you've heard of him.
Well, how'd old man Barr make his money?
And citrus and real estate, and then sharecropping.
Oh, yeah.
He had a packing house there.
Oh, did he?
Each farmer up and down that old TNJ railroad, they had little groves and truck farms. And I believe I can truthfully say 8 out of 10 of them went broke fooling with it. After the big freeze when it killed all the orange trees, then they didn't have anything but the truck crops to fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
And they had borrowed money on their homes, mortgage their homes, and make 2 or 3 crops. And if they didn't hit it, well, they lost their home.
Yeah. And he got them?
No. The banks or whoever they borrowed the money from. Now, I'm mad no man Barr did get
some of them. Yeah.
Because he was financially able to make the loan.
The old T&J Railroad?
Yeah. And it was supposed to be, I reckon it's supposed to be Tampa and Jacksonville and Tampa.
Yeah.
But it only run from Sampson City down here below Fairfield, right out in the woods to a little old place called the Mantle. Wasn't nothing there but a store.
Mm-hmm.
But they hauled everything at a man across town, that was a little freight, and they had one little passenger coach on it.
Yeah.
It was a mixed train.
Yeah. One train a day, maybe?
Yeah.
It
went down in the morning, came back in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And
well, that's as much as you needed.
Yeah, they did all the hauling. Then Micanopy had another railroad, you know, the short had run out to the junction.
Yeah. Well, now, how close was this to Micanopy, this T&J?
It run right. You know where the light plant is?
Sure.
Not the light plant, the water works.
Yeah, yeah.
It run right along there, went south.
Oh, right there in Micanopy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then the spur of the junction, it backed out and connected with the T&J.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right almost where they come together, old man Barr had a big packing house down there.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was the big man there.
Yeah.
At that time. Well, now, did you ever run into him?
Old man Barr?
Yeah.
Yes. I worked a little bit for him when my brother was up at Lisbon. And I told you about when he'd go to pay you off on Saturday, he'd take $1 bill, and he'd rub it like that between his fingers to be sure it wasn't two.
Yeah. Oh, he's the one who did that.
Yeah. That was the old man. And old Dr. Watkins, he and I didn't hit it off together very much, because I was working for his son, and he was trying to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And
two bosses.
Yeah. I didn't go along with that. One time, Barr sent me in there to get a bug in. The bug was over to his granddad, and old Dixie Watkins was living with the old man Barr. And I was out there hitting up the buggy, and he'd come out there and he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Can't you see? I'm hitching up the buggy." And he said, he started to say, "Who told you to do it?" And before he got out, I said, "Do you think I'd come over here and get this buggy if I wasn't told to?" And about that time, Barr come out there, and he told his dad to go in and out and shut his mouth.
Oh. Now that's his daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His daddy.
But the his granddaddy now. That was, what
old,
do you call him?
Old Man Barnes.
Old
John
man,
Barnes.
Old Man John Barnes. Yeah. Now, which one was it you opened the gate for?
That was the old man. Old Man J.J. Barnes.
Oh, that was John Barnes' daddy.
Yeah.
Oh.
John knows. That was John Barnes' granddaddy.
Good Lord, that way back then, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Old Man Barr was...
You mean you had the Barr, the young fella out here, and then his daddy,
yeah.
and then his granddaddy, John Barr, and this old man was his granddaddy?
No, it's just the three of them. This Old Man Barr and Dixie Watkins was his son-in-law, and then John Barr Watkins was the grandson of Old Man Barr and the son of Dixie Watkins.
Yeah.
And he had some kin folks. As one of them had one, he did have, I think it's out. You come out here on this lake, well, on a still night, you can hear a little old kicker running down there if you rev it up any, you know.
Yeah.
He'd get out there and hunt frogs all night. We very seldom ever hear him because he just going along slow, and it didn't make any noise hardly. But
now that's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lord, when you speed one up, it'll really make the racket.
Yeah, like an airplane.
Yeah. yeah.
Now let me see. We was back there at the old man John Barr. Now he's not the one you let through the gate.
Yeah. The old man J.J. Barr, the granddaddy.
Yes. Now he was, now when that happened he was still in good shape.
He was active, yeah.
Active.
But he was old. I'm adding he's 75 years old.
Well, that little older than he is now. If a fellow was 75 then, he was...
Older than you are 75. I'll be 74 tomorrow.
Yeah.
And he was quite a character. He had an old slavery time nigger.
Yeah.
And the old nigger wanted some land to farm, and he called him Captain Barr. He said, Captain Barr, I don't have any money. That's all right. He said, you just go on and farm the land. The old nigga wanted to plant corn. And he says, when you make the corn, he said, just bring me a third of it. And, well, that was pretty good rent, you know. So the old nigga went and made the crop. And he gathered it. He didn't make but two loads. And he had a kind of a bad day. And so the old man jumped on him about it. And the old nigga told him, he says, Captain Boy says, I didn't make but two loads. Says, I never made the third load. He had an old nigger preacher. He wasn't so old. He was a good hand and an honest nigger, I think. And he'd tell it on the old man. He said they'd go in there and to get the mules early in the morning and all.
Yeah.
The old man would always be out there and he'd say, good morning, Captain Boy. How are you this morning? I've seen better morning than this. Catch a mule, catch a mule. If you want to get in the field and go to work. Well, to show you how conservative he was, he'd plant his corn, and we'd always take a small sweep to side it the first time. And he'd put those niggas in there with a 24-inch sweep. Side up, say it works, see?
Yeah.
He'd side the corn up and then run down the middle one time with that thing, well, he had it worked.
Yeah.
And shoot, a lot of times we'd bar it off before we'd side it up.
Yeah.
Because we never did hoe any corn, that was out of the question.
Oh, you never did?
No, I heard my daddy say he wouldn't furnish a man salt putting his bread. It's pay to go behind him hoeing corn.
Yeah.
And I never remember I was learning how to plow. Well, I learned how, but I was a little careless, I reckon you'd call it. When we had a lot of stumps in the field back then.
Yeah.
And you'd plow up to a stump just as close as you could and jerk up your plow and then swing around the stump.
Yeah.
And you'd be plowing right along that side of it, and he'd say, "Whoa, back up to that stump and get up close to it." I thought it was foolishness, but he was right.
Yeah.
And another thing he'd make us, we had a lot of rail fences back there. And after you had to hoe the outside, because a lot of the woods was turpentine, and they burn those once a year. And if you didn't hoe around your fence, well, old rail fence got fire. It was the devil to put out.
Yeah. But I never heard about having a hoe around your fence.
Yeah. Well, he had us to hoe on both sides of it.
Yeah.
And the first year we moved out that west of Fairfield, he planted 25 acres of long cotton.
Yeah.
And had one old slave retired woman, I never will forget. She was a good old woman. She washed for mother for years and years.
Yeah.
And I didn't know nothing about hoeing. They knew.
Yeah.
Well, they could take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And it worked the hell out of me. I'd get to the end, I'd say, "Call Aunt Dora." Her name was Dora Gooden. I'd say, "Aunt Dora, let's rest a little bit. If you don't get that hoe going, I'm going to tell your daddy on you, you lazy rascal." I could have chopped him in the damn head. And, you know, long cotton is way harder to pick than short cotton.
No.
Real fast picker, he might get 125 pounds a day.
No.
Well, my daddy gave me a task of 75 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't forgotten about this old nigger making me work so hard. And the rows was a quarter of a mile long.
Yeah.
You'd have your picking sack, and then you'd have a sack at the end to empty in.
Yeah.
And I'd catch him way up the row and have 5 or 6 stickers in there. I'd slip down there and make out like I'd go and empty my bag. I'd get me a little handful out of each one of them sacks. I call myself getting even with them. And niggas, I've always watched them and listened to them. And gathering time uphill, especially when you had beans, string beans, and sometimes you'd have 40 or 50 niggas in the field picking.
Yeah.
And there's one.
And they just can on all the time.
Talking, laughing, and saying. There's one old nigga out here, Jeanette Williams. She had 3 daughters. And they could sing, and they carried all the parts. And I swear it seemed like sometimes you could just feel it. Hair rising up, you know, and they'd get happy as a lark. Now all they was making was just enough to eat and get a few clothes, but they were happy.
Yeah. They didn't have anybody breathing down their neck,
no,
you know,
no.
Making them nervous.
That's right. They were contented. They'd get up and had to haul most of them from making up out there, see.
Now, where was that? Out in
Hammock? Yeah, out in the Hammock out here. And had,
well, now, you all had cleared up a right smart ground out there.
Well, there was old fields, but I'm talking about up there at the original place where we had, where you built a house.
Yeah.
And had the barn and the water tank and all. Wasn't any cleared up there till after we went out there. And they cleared up about 28 acres, I guess it was. And a lot of it was flat. We had he had it ditched. And then natural ditched to where it would drain in the lake. Lord, I man, some of that land up there cost him $300 an acre to get it cleared.
Yeah. Even
then. Yeah, and back this side, off from the lake just a little bit, there's some rolling land up there that would have been a whole lot more desirable, but he never thought about it, and he wanted to have it dead where he wanted, so it was his money.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Now, that was Captain Barr?
No, that was the young
John again.
Yeah. John Barr Watkins.
Yeah. You called him Barr?
Yeah. That was what everybody called him, Barr.
Barr.
There, if you, the niggas always called him Mister, but he was young than Lee, and he and I were about the same age. And Henry Brown, he's just a year too young than I am. So.
And how much older was Lee than you?
He was 6, 8 years older than I was.
Now you called him the, your next oldest brother. Does
yeah.
that mean that you were next to him?
No.
He is next to the oldest.
Yeah, he was next to the oldest. There was two boys and two girls. Michelle and the Yendon and Allie. And then Tom and Esma. And then me and Lila. Lila was my youngest sister. And she was, there was 6 years difference in her and my age.
Yeah.
But the other seven, it was just 2 years. Right close to 2 years difference. In
but now, Captain Barr, he'd come out and sort of overlook things now and then?
No. The biggest thing he ever did was he had those hogs out there. And but as said before we ever went out there, well, he was kind of the boss. They didn't do any farming to speak of out there until we went out there.
Yeah.
And Barr got an idea he wanted to get rich off of syrup. And we planted 6 acres of sugar cane.
That's a lot of sugar cane.
Yeah, and when he started, we had a power mill and evaporator and a big old kettle.
Yeah.
And the second year, we made 29 barrels of syrup out there.
29 barrels?
And that was 4 days and after dark. And I was a flunky, I reckon you'd call it. I did all the grinding and had a big old gasoline engine.
Yeah.
And build me a good big platform. It holds 3 or 4 2-horse wagon loads of cane. And I'd start that thing up and I had 5 barrels.
Yeah.
And shoot, I could grind those 5 barrels an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You wouldn't put it in a stalk at a time. You'd just get up an armload and throw it in there and it would grind it.
Oh, it would.
And I didn't have to run more than a little over half time grinding because I couldn't get too far ahead of them with cooking.
Sure. Well, now, that cooking, if you cook on your kettle, what do you call it, your big syrup kettle, you got to know what to look for with that.
Yeah, but in that evaporator, you got to know what to do with that. See, the juice goes in one end and the syrup comes out the other. But you've got to skim it and get all that skimmings off, and then you have a funnel and a strainer where your syrup comes out to strain into your barrel or jug or whatever you might catch it in.
Yeah. Well, now you don't use an evaporator and a kettle, too.
Two men. Yeah, one man runs the evaporator and one runs the kettle.
Well, now sort of straighten me out on that, Tuck. I've seen them down here. I've just seen them make syrup one time, and all they had was the kettle.
That little old kettle over here, to didn't you and Florence and all of them go over there?
Yeah.
Well, now I think.
Over there at Gertrude.
I know what her name is, if I could think.
Moore's School. Someplace over there.
I cooked. A neighbor Davis over here. I cooked his syrup over there 2-3 years ago, I reckon.
Uh-huh.
And well, yeah, she set up pretty good. She had a thermometer, you know, and all.
Yeah.
But the kettle was awful small.
Yeah.
I don't think it held but seemed like 80 gallons.
Yeah. Well, now they had to be pretty careful in watching that.
Yeah. Yeah. And when it gets right, you've got to get it out there pretty quick.
Yes. But now, the only experience, I never had a kettle. All we ever had was evaporators, as I sort of them up there.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, they go from one little section to another, and you can watch it. You're a little safer and all. But now, you all had both.
Yeah. And old man Tom Johnson, he cooked on the kettle. And Bill Davis, he had the experience, and he was a good syrup maker.
Uh-huh.
He had a thing that you could, if it It wasn't right when it come out. He'd shut it off and let us stay in there and cook some more.
Yeah.
Till it did get to the right stage. And that was awfully. It was raised on real light hammock land, and the syrup was just as clear as honey.
Yeah.
And it didn't have a dark.
Well, now, syrup wasn't standard food for you when you all was living here?
Yes, sorry. And before we started growing, I came, Lee and Henry Brown and me was up there. My dad-in-law was here, and he was a good syrup maker. We'd come up here and buy a gallon of syrup a week, and we'd eat.
Yes.
During every meal, we'd have some syrup and biscuits.
A gallon a week ain't enough.
Enough for three men, no.
Oh, fuck. Working man. That's we never had syrup up the country. We had sorghum molasses, and that's I don't think people that like syrup would care for sorghum. I like them both, but I've seen a fellow with a big family, you know, he got a little land out there, and they'd make that sorghum molasses, and he'd bring it in them gallon tins and just put it in his basement, just have a shelf under there, just the whole length of the house. And they'd eat three meals a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it. I've been over to my neighbors. I remember that very clear. They have a half a dozen to it. And we'd all just pour that sorghum molasses on hot biscuits, you see, and just consume great quantities of it.
That's right.
And it was good.
Mm-hmm. Well, my daddy and Henry Brown, the old daddy, and Kirk Mixon was the... Well, he was a syrup maker. He was the best in the country.
Oh, I see.
Well, all of them would, if they got the time, if Kirk wanted to fix his tin up first, grind it, my dad and Brown would go help him. Then, when they got ready, they'd haul the tin up, and Kirk would do the cooking, they'd do the grinding, and they'd put a lot of it in bottles. Didn't make no difference what size bottle.
Yeah.
And then sieve it.
Yeah.
Put a cork in it, corn cob, and push it down in your bottle and seal up on the. And 5 years time, that syrup would be just like it come out to that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You put it in a barrel or a jug and don't seal it up, it'll get strong.
Yes.
And
yes.
A lot of times, if it's not cooked down low enough in hot, well, it'll ferment. But we never did have no trouble. He had a thermometer, he cooked it by.
Well, now, when he put his corn cob in there, how'd he seal it up?
Well, you have sealing wax.
Yes.
Get your hot iron and hold it right over there and stick your iron to the sealing wax and let it drip on there till it sealed up that little depression down in there.
Yeah.
And then it was hard when it cooled, it was real hard.
Yeah.
I have seen them seal it with rosin, pine gum.
Yeah.
And get that hot, you know, and put it on there and it seals all right.
Well, now, if they're doing it now, they'd use that other stuff.
Yeah, paraffin.
Paraffin, yes.
I don't think that's as good as the old sealing wax. You could take the sealing wax, come in bars or sticks, about big as your thumb, and it'd be about that long. You could take one of them things and seal 50, 75 bottles with it.
Oh, I see.
Just enough to make a seal on that good, and it was airtight.
Uh-huh. What did it do to the cob? Just clean it off and stick it down there?
Oh, yeah, clean it off and stick it down there. Break it up, chop it to the length you want your cork. Or your stick down in your bottle. Sometimes you'd have a little trouble. Some of your bottles would probably have a smaller neck than the others. And some of them would have a larger one. You had to pick out your cob to fit the bottle.
Well, in them days, you never figured that the time would ever come when you'd get along without corn cobs.
No.
I haven't even seen a corn cob in years.
There's a little tale about a corn cob. This old farmer, he had a friend in town who had a newspaper. They'd visit back and forth. And the paper man finally told him, he says, why don't you take the paper? He says, it won't cost you much. Back then, it was $2 a year or something like that. Nothing much. Farmer says, I'm not making no money. He says, I can't spend no money for a newspaper. He says, oh, I'm going to put you on the list. And whatever you have, if you have anything, he says, you don't have to have money. Just give me a little something.
Well, now, there's a weekly paper.
Yeah. You can get the paper, so the old man sent it to him, and he took it. Finally, one time, the newspaper went out there, and he said, asked him how he's getting along. He said, all right. He said, you still getting the paper? I said, yeah. But he says, I ain't got a thing to pay for it yet. He says, I lost my old brood sow, and says, my cow's going dry, and I don't get no eggs. He says, I just ain't got nothing. Newspaper man stood a little while. He said, well, don't you have some corn cobs? He says, I can take those and have them made into paper. Old man stood a little bit. He said, no, if I had any corn cobs, I wouldn't need your darn paper. He's using them for toilet paper.
Yes, sir, that was a good card.
And talking about, I think I remarked at your house last night, I wish I never had invented light bread.
Yes.
Well, my mother used to make her own bread and roll.
Yeah, that's different.
That was different from this stuff you get now.
Yeah.
Boy, when she'd start that thing to cooking on Friday, it smelled so good you just couldn't hardly wait.
Yeah.
And she'd make 8 or 10 loaves and 3 or 4 big pans of rolls. And she had a bread box she'd put it in. Well, long towards last when it give out, it wasn't as good as it was when it was real fresh, but it's good bread right on.
Yeah. Of course, it had some body.
Yeah. She'd make her own yeast cakes, put them up on the house on a board to dry.
Yeah.
She'd tell you to watch them. If you come up with clouds, you better get them down. She didn't want them wet.
Yeah.
And my daddy said when there's a crowd of them coming from South Carolina, there was the Nettleses and the Smokes and the Chitties and the Mathis. And I said Nettleses. I don't know, there's 6 or 8 families of them. And they all settled right down there around Fairfield and Flemington.
Oh, yeah.
And all of them farming. And they had to start off from scratch. Well, if you had a bad year and didn't have any meat and lard, one fellow would give you a can of lard or give you some meat, bring it to you, no pay. Then the next year, if he failed, the other neighbors would chip in and see him through.
Yeah.
Said it's very, very little money.
Yeah.
When my dad had that big cotton crop down there, when he gathered it, you know what he got a pound for? 5 cents. In the seed.
Yeah.
And old John Smoke had a gin that fair field. He ginned it, I don't know, he got big pay for that.
Yeah.
You could tell him you wanted to request that he save you seed. And sometime they'd get them crushed and use them for fertilizer.
Yeah.
And it makes good feed too, you know.
Yeah.
You know Mack Weaver and Nicky Nuffin?
Mack Weaver?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He used to. He was a barber at one time, you know, and a good one.
Yeah.
But he had tore both your ears off while he's cutting your hair.
Oh, it is.
And he was telling me about, he tried to fool with cattle a little bit. He said you could take cottonseed meal and rub it up and down the back and it'll fatten. I believe I'm part of that.
When I was here, did he tell tall stories like that?
Yeah. And he can always tell you something, regardless of what you tell. He'll tell something just a little bit bigger or better.
Is that right? Yes, I know Mack Weaver.
Yeah.
He got those dogs.
Yeah, and Buck got the store, their brother.
Yes.
And Buck and me, well, there's 5 or 6 of us, worked up there when this building came blanding.
Oh.
We were supposed to be carpenters.
Yeah.
They nicknamed us up there. Nail benders and lumber butchers. We got along good. That was when we just first started going up a little bit. We was getting $1 an hour.
Oh.
And it was big money then, you know. More than we'd ever made before.
Yeah.
I got on the good side of a little boss man to start off with. And we was building sidewalls for tents. You had your frame there. All you had to do was lay your studding in it. Put 6 pieces of siding and it's all the siding just like that there. Once in a while you'd have to make a joint and nail it to those studs. And then if you had the ends stuck over, you had a little saw, you sawed them off with. And a big old fella come in there one day and he didn't know which end of a hammer to pick up. And the boss kept working, finally walked up to him and says, "Friend," he says, "how long you been a carpenter?" So I said a little bit, he says, "how long have been working?" The boss looked at his wife and says, 40 minutes. He says, "that's it."
Mac, was he one of your...
No, Buck worked up there, but Mac, I don't think Mac ever did.
Yeah.
There was a whole crowd of boys, the Harold boys and the Summer Feaster boys and Crowder.
Yeah.
And this fella that died the other day, Walt Thompson. Oh, Beatty Rogers even worked up there a while.
Yeah.
And McCann. The old man McCann. Old man McCann was a good old fellow. I liked him. He was running that ice plant and the storage plant down at McIntosh. One summer I killed a big old fat hog. Well, at that time we didn't have a refrigeration. I had to take it down there. We got talking. I said, "I don't know if you want to mess with that meat. Go ahead and get it." He had a pretty large salmon. He wasn't making no big salary there. So he said, "Yeah, I'd appreciate it." Went down there to get it. And I had a ham, a side, and a shoulder, and another shoulder. I said, "Lyman, where's the rest of my meat?" He says, "You told me to get a mess." I said, "Yeah, but you took it the wrong way. You took it all and left me a mess." Just kidding. Took your fruit in there, you'd care, say, 100 boxes. He put down, you brought in 100 boxes. Well, if they were good, they'd pack out 100 boxes or more.
Yeah.
And that's all he did, and he'd, whatever the price was, or if you wanted to ship them, you shipped them, and the check would be mailed back to you. And just like Buddy Huff and them do it down there.
Yeah.
You'd size them, and sometimes they washed them back then, and then along them time, every orange had to be wrapped in paper. And he'd charge you so much for washing them and wrapping and packing them.
Oh, he shipped them for you.
Yeah.
He didn't buy them from
you.
He
got a commission, yeah.
Yeah.
That's where he made his money. Plus, he'd charge you so much a box.
So he didn't have anything... Standaloo.
Only thing he had was a little bit of machinery he had, which was very little bit.
Yeah.
And then he'd have to hire packers to pack them.
Yeah.
But you paid for it.
You paid for it.
You'd get them up.
So the grower stood all the expenses.
Yeah, just like your Buddy Huff's down there.
Yeah.
You take your stuff down there and you put up in a fancy box, which it might bring a little bit more. But you pay for it. That's what a few pinches.
Yeah.
You go down there and say, "Buddy, I want to plant 4 sacks of beans. When you want seed and fertilizer?" Well, him buying in carload lots of big lots, he'd get it $3 or $4 on a ton cheaper than you did. You could.
Yeah.
make a profit on that. You'd have it hauled out to your house, barn, wherever you wanted it. Then when you got your stuff ready, you carried it down there. He'd tell you he had to have a quarter for it to go through the packing house. Well, he furnished it. Now, if you had any new hampers, he might. But if you bought your hampers from him, he got them from the mill in 5,000 or 10,000 lots.
Yeah.
He got them and sent them too cheap than you could. And he made a profit on that.
Yeah.
Last year I farmed, I got sick and I didn't make nothing. And I owed him lacking a few dollars being $400. And I forgot after the season, there's nobody around the office on Saturday afternoon. They get through 12 o'clock and they're through. And I went down, he wasn't there, so I just let it go. I never got a statement from him for 2 years. Till I got on my feet.
Oh.
And I sold some cattle and I went down there one day, I don't remember what day in the week it was. And little Charlie Joyner was bookkeeper there then. And I didn't believe it now. Charlie got a little money, I'm gonna come down here and straighten up, and he figured it up. $396, I believe. And I gave him a check for it. We were sitting there talking about fishing and hunting.
Yeah.
And Buddy come in. And he said, well, damn, you're a stranger. Now, if it wasn't by choice, I was sick. I thought I got a hold of those money. And I thought I better bring you some down here. And I never did get a statement or nothing. And he turned to Charlie and said, how much did he pay? Charlie said he paid all of it. He said, damn it, I told you he was honest. Yeah, I got in with this Gigger down here, Lynn Gigger, and we planted 26 acres of beans one time and 4 acres of cow peas and 4 acres of roasting their corn. Well, Lynn had owed him a bill, I don't know, a year or two. And my gosh, when his part come, another buddy took it out. You know, to take out like mine. We wait till the end of the season,
yeah.
And we settle it all up.
Now, that was your last year of farming, you said.
Mm-hmm. Truck farming.
Yeah.
I quit that and then went to planting. As the old fella says, hog and hominy.
Yeah.
Planted feed for hogs and plant some feed for my cattle.
Oh, I see. Peanuts for your hogs?
Yeah, peanuts and chew.
Yeah.
Lord, we've had these little fields here and peanuts and chew and put the hogs in there. And you'd have more doves than you could chew.
Yeah.
You don't see that anymore because people don't plant seed for
them. They don't have the feed.
That's right. Then there's, I'll bet you there's 500 or 600 now to where there used to be more than one or two.
Yeah.
And we had quail.
Your when was that when you had your last year vegetable farming, truck farming?
Well, I was operated on in 1950 for a double hernia.
Yeah.
And in 55 I was operated on for a prostate gland.
Yeah.
It's right along in there somewhere.
Why you farmed clear on up as long as anybody did.
Yeah.
Everybody quit by then, Bob.
They had to quit.
Had to quit.
My handicap was I had to haul all my labor from Micanopy.
Oh, yeah.
I did have two niggas that go and come field hands. But gathering time, you had to go out there and haul them out and then haul them back.
Yeah.
And it got to where they kept getting sorry and sorry.
Sorry and sorry.
And
so you just had to quit.
I had to quit. The last year I farmed, like I told you, I had to sell some cows to pay off my debt.
Yeah.
And I decided when it got that, it was time to quit.
Did you ever raise melons?
No. I did. We raised, 11 acres here. And I had a nigga, he was a good hand, a good farmer. He could do anything. He'd drive a tractor, plow a horse, a mule, help drive cows and anything. So we didn't get a good stand, and I decided I'd go in there and replant them. And they looked so shabby. One day he said, "You want to buy my part of that mill?" I said, "I don't know. I don't look like they're going to make much." He says, "I believe if you'd give me $300, he says, "that'd about come to my way." He says, "I believe I'd sell it." I said, "Well, let me study about it a little bit." And finally I said, "Hell, I can't lose much." And I said, "All right, I'll do it." And first Sunday, Robert Denton come out here. He had this patch here was airless. And we went out there and picked 59 watermelons. And old George Miles runs the store. Stuart come out here and helped us. He says, "Mr. Mac, everybody's melon from me. What's he going to do to that man, boy? Is he himself?" I said, "Well, if he wants some 50 cents a piece, he can help." And I thought that would be about all. And then in 2 weeks, damn, the thing started getting ripe.
Yeah.
And Cap Gordon, were you here at the time Cap Gordon was going around buying cows and selling stuff?
This is the end of Channel One Right. The end of Channel One Right. Talk with Chuck Mack on his porch. all afternoon, Thursday afternoon, 2nd of April, 1970. That's the quietest, nicest, most circumstantial tape that I ever made, the talk that I ever heard. The end of Channel One Right, and the continuation of Chuck Mack's talk on Thursday afternoon while Ms. Mack went to the doctor. Him and me, he and I, sat out there on the porch and talked. We talked the whole time. 2 hours and a half. 2 hours and a half of solid talk, and all of it nice and quiet. And at the end, he coughed and had to go get a cough drop, but he kept on talking. This is the end of Channel One Right. The end of Channel One Right. That afternoon, says afternoon. He was supposed to be resting, but I didn't know that. He rested a little while, and he sat there and talked, and it was easy talk. And just perfectly charming. He just picked up everything as quiet and slow. He had been talking fast.